UNC's Point Grey campus are located on the unceded, ancestral, and traditional territories of the Musqueam people. And every Tuesday at noon, we broadcast our weekly news radio show, Against the Current, where we cover things related and timely to the Lower Mainland. My name is Jasmine, I'm this year's News Collective Lead, and I'll be your host for today's episode, and today we have some pretty exciting stuff. We'll be talking to a couple of UBC students about the student-directed seminar that they're doing about the psychology of romantic love. And then afterwards, we'll be chatting with a TEDxUBC speaker this year about why we can use food as a storytelling device. So some super fun stuff planned. And for our first interview, I will hand it over to Theo, who's going to be talking to these student coordinators about their seminar.
Hi, I'm Ryan. I'm an international student. I'm currently majoring in psychology and minoring in counseling. I grew up in Singapore, and I moved to Vancouver 4 years ago. And I'm really interested in the psychology of human relationships.
Yeah. Okay, so hi, I'm Tenyul. I'm a chemistry major, and I'm also a varsity rugby athlete. I'm from Manchester in the UK, international student as well. And yeah, just hopped onto the psychology course with Ryan from previous arts.
Cool. So yeah, I want to hear a little bit more about that. You two started the student-directed seminar on the psychology of romantic love. I'm wondering if you can just like take me through how that came to be, like what went into, you know, creating the course. I guess we can start with Ryan and then go to Daniel.
Well, the honest story is, well, 2 years ago, I had my first like relationship and my first heartbreak. And it was a really tough time for me. And I was like, it was the first time I'd ever felt something like that. And it was really powerful. And it really like fascinated me to learn a little bit more about why I was feeling all these feelings and why I was feeling in this so strongly for another person, for another human being. And that sort of threw me into a lot of the literature around the psychology of breakups, the psychology of romantic relationships and you know, people, human relationships in general, and that sort of sparked an interest.
As we've previously said, because we're roommates, we talked about this a lot going through his stages of breakup, I guess. But I also, one of my courses that I took previously was Dr. Hoskins' class on drugs, brain, and society, which is a psychology course. I took that obviously because of the connections to chemistry with drugs and how it affects the brain and things like that. So that introduced me to the world of psychology. And the conversations that me and Ryan were having, we were like, well, why don't we learn more about this? Where can we learn more about this from a psychological point of view? And Ryan had previously been in a student-directed seminar, so thought maybe we should start our own.
And so can you explain a bit about what a student-directed seminar is and how, what the process was for kind of creating that? What was the pitch?
So basically this is a program that's been going on for some time here at UBC, where if a student has an idea for a prospective course on a topic that's not currently offered within a department, so you kind of like have to find a niche. And so we saw that anything to do with like actually teaching the psychology of love as a course was not offered here at UBC, and it's kind of been offered at other schools in North America and in Europe and around the world. Like there's specific modules on the psychology of romantic relationships and human relationships, and there's nothing like that within the current psych department. So you have to find, like, you have to present something that's kind of new to not currently offered by anything or any other course here. And you basically have a kind of like a proposal, a 6-page documentation that you create that sort of outlines why you wanted to do this, how it'll like benefit learning here at UBC, and sort of like a pitch to a panel of, I think, 12, made up of students, professors, and some other staff, I think, who run the program.
Right. And in that pitch, did you mention at all your personal experience? Was that a part of it?
Yeah. I think I always lead with the, like, this was something I went through myself, and that sparked the passion or interest. And I always have a line that that's the honest truth of how it came. And yeah, That was part of my pitch.
I think
as
most
well.
Of the people that over all the other courses we've seen, the people that have tried to start as a run their own course, all have quite a personal connection to the subjects that they're wanting to run. From my experience, I don't think anyone really gets rejected from this program because people like they love these kind of seminars and people wanting to learn more. It's whether the course is popular is kind of the determining factor on whether it will go ahead or not. You need like a minimum, I think, of 5 people to sign up. So
Yes. So tell me a bit more about the classes themselves. Like, what do they look like? How are they structured?
Yeah. So once you get your sort of like stage of approval kind of set, you work with a faculty sponsor. They sort of help you come up with the like meat and bones. So we had to put a lot of work in developing our syllabus and sort of developing basically assignment plans. Sort of a lot of it is a lot of the seminar is structured to be peer reviewed and peer based. So there's a lot of basically our class works as like a discussion group where we sort of people come, we've set material aside beforehand to read and come like watch a podcast or read this journal article, and people then come up with certain discussion questions critiquing the theory or presenting an argument or a finding, and we sort of have a go together. And the classes are pretty small, so you sort of go around and have like a group discussion or debate about topics. That's sort of how our class is structured.
Yeah, what we've started to do too is that we've allowed people to sign up for a day throughout the term in a topic that they find most interesting. They will come with potentially more material or new stuff to share with the class, and they will kind of run or facilitate the hour and a half, because we are still students in this course too. We don't know the material any more than any of the other students. So throughout the weeks, we're reading the material. We're also posting discussion questions. We're just the facilitators.
You mentioned in the syllabus that you have to maintain professionalism and that it's not a substitute for therapy, but it is a really intimate subject. And I'm wondering how intimate do the classes get? How personal do those conversations get?
I feel like as we discuss more and as the students are getting to know each other more, people are way more comfortable talking about their personal experiences. But some people also do catch themselves sharing way too much, and then they reel it back in. But we're saying specifically it's not for a therapy session. We don't want people to come in and ask us for advice because we're not professionals or things like that. But we've had students say that even just going through this and learning and like reflecting on their own experiences is a sort of therapy anyway, and they've looked back on their own experiences and gained some insight.
Yeah, I would say as our class has been going on, I think people are able to relate what we're learning to events in their personal lives and sort of connect the dots and then share that. And I think it's been great over the course of the last couple of weeks to see those connections being made a bit more frequently now that the class is a bit more comfortable together, and people are able to connect the sort of theory we're presenting and the sort of research we're presenting to aspects of their own personal relationships, and you can sort of, it connects the bridge between, I think, like science and real life experience.
Yeah, well, I'm finding it really insightful too, because everybody's coming in with their own personal experiences, and it's way better when people share and they're intimate with their stories, because people have such opposing views on something that you would think is so simple that the intimate stories can be the interesting part of it.
Yeah,
so we especially saw that in our cross-cultural perspectives on love, because we've got a wide variety of international kids in our class too. So,
And so on that topic, what are some of the most interesting things that you've learned?
Yeah, well, my favorite, we had a week. I think we looked at. So I'll tell a little background of how our class is sort of structured, like long term. So we kind of are going through the stages an individual would sort of go through when they're like falling in love with someone and having a relationship. So we kind of started with defining love as a construct, as a psychological concept, and also like personal definitions of love. We went into looking at the current psychological theories and research. We then looked at cross-cultural perspectives on love. And now then we looked at we had a week on attraction, sort of like what happens in that falling in love with someone or meeting someone for the first time. And now we're going through like sex, relationship development, relationship maintenance, relationship breakdown, We have a module on technology and love, but it's sort of like basically going through a journey of someone going in love. And one of the things I found super interesting a couple of weeks ago, we looked at the actual brain anatomy of people in love, was how there's a paper that presented the neural correlates of certain brain areas in your brain that light up when you're in the first stage of the honeymoon phase, it's called, of romantic love with someone else, are the same brain areas that light up in people who use substances like cocaine. And that she posits that love is actually can be constructed as a positive addiction, a good addiction, but an addiction nonetheless. It hits the same brain areas. And I just thought it was, for me personally, that was one of the papers that kind of took, they scanned people who had just been rejected in love, and a lot of the brain areas associated with physical pain, withdrawal, craving, and they saw that mapped out on people, and I thought that was amazing. It really like makes you feel like you're not going crazy when you have all these strong emotions, and it's fascinating to see how the brain works when it comes to something like love, like that. Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree. I found the brain, like, I guess chemistry, really interesting too. But my most interesting to me anyway was the attraction module that we went through, especially the evolutionary side, because I like being in this arts class because it's giving me loads of opinions from the majority of the students in the class are arts students, but we have a neuroscientist in there, we have me who's a chemist, and we have somebody in business. But the way I look at it is very logical, and the evolutionary attraction that we learned about was also very logical, and I just love that. So that was my most interesting part, but yeah.
All right, it's been super fun learning a little bit more about these coordinators and about the seminar itself and what a student-directed seminar even is. But before we wrap up the rest of this interview, we're going to launch into a short break, so stay tuned.
A few words before I go to sleep. I feel like I'm gonna dream tonight. Big bad ones, you know? The kind you like.
There is a lot of music out there, but only some is strange enough for you. My name is B, and on SlimeWire, I do the work for you, picking out freaky tunes to rule your nighttime world. So check it out every Wednesday at 10 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM.
Slice of Life Art and Gift Shop is Vancouver's choicest destination for one-of-a-kind artist-made prints, posters, screen prints, riso prints, paintings, acrylic paintings, watercolor paintings, ceramic mugs, ceramic plates, ceramic bowls, ceramic pots, lapel pins, hats, toques, crochet bathing suits, jewelry, trinkets, knickknacks, hand-painted signs, curated thrift, and a bunch more stuff that won't fit in this designated block of airtime. Slice of Life Art and Gift Shop, located at 1636 Venables, just off Commercial, open 11 to 6, 6 days a week.
Stay up being want to change the state of the world, but instead you keep buying material goods to satisfy whatever desire you have in that very moment? Me too. But now you can do both! Rock Shop and Community Thrift is a local vintage shop that fulfills your 1970s all-chic fantasy while also supporting at-risk people through their compassionate and supportive work training program. All of their profits go to the PHS Community Services Society to support ongoing healthcare, harm reduction, and health promotion projects in Vancouver and Victoria. So stop by their two locations, Community Unisex on West Hastings or Community Frock Shop on Corral Street. And if you know any other local businesses that deserve recognition for their generous business practices or their contributions to the community, please DM us on Instagram at CITR and Discorder because we would love to spotlight them. Because hey, if you can't stop buying, you might as well start supporting.
Okay, welcome back everyone. You're listening to CITR 101.9's weekly news radio show, Against the Current. And now that we're done with the break, we're going to launch right back into our interview with Theo and the student coordinators of the Psychology of Love student-directed seminar here at UBC to learn more about themselves, the seminar, and what it's been like for them.
And has it helped, I guess, you, or if you could speak to other students, has it helped people think about their relationships and their breakups and things like that? Like, has that been any feedback that you've been getting, or for you yourself and your own relationships, has it helped kind of think about that?
For me personally, I think it's done a lot of cool, like, I've been able to understand a lot, because that's how I sort of like to see things. I like to analyze things, especially when it comes to people. And for me personally, it's like cool to know that these things are going on while I'm experiencing something that can be difficult, and sort of understanding why this happens. And I think it's cool, people have talked about in the class, that it's just really cool to understand, have a better understanding of what love is, because we all, like, everybody experiences these things and experiences in different ways, and you sort of can feel like, you know, you're going crazy, or
everyone feels like, wild. I think they're alone in this situation. But then when they're reading a paper and it's scientifically telling you why it's happening to you, then people have had some like light bulb moments. And we have closer friends in the class who are going through difficult times at the moment too, and they're finding it very insightful and it's helpful to them.
And I think also people are more self-aware now. Yeah. So, like, I think us going through the material, we're a lot more self-aware about sort of how we maybe conduct ourselves going into romantic relationships, or sort of understanding ourselves better, like what are we attracted to, how does attraction even work? And I feel like you get a understanding of that, it grounds you, or it just makes you feel a bit more aware.
The only thing I would say is a disadvantage or like a negative comment that people have said of this class is the way that we look at it and the way that the studies look at romantic love, in some sense, it destroys the magic of what love is. And we've had in class, we've had discussions, and students have brought that up and been like, well, why are we looking at it like this? I just want to, it's such a nice feeling. I don't want to scientifically break it down into this. It's like, so that's the only negative, I think. But going through it, I don't know. I don't feel like the magic's disappearing at all, but
that's one of the constant questions that we get, or that I even pose, is like, to what extent are we like breaking it down, or trying to force logic into something that is actually inherently might be irrational and illogical at times, even within the literature. Like, I think we're going to present a paper in a couple of weeks about how a lot of dating apps say they can, you know, you get your most compatible with people, and people say they can predict compatibility, but they've run a lot of meta-analyses with AI recently. We don't know how to predict whether two people will actually go on and have a relationship. We know things about attraction and sort of what makes you attracted to someone, but we still have no idea. Love is still something we kind of don't really know a lot about. So I feel like that's where the magic still is. Yeah.
And on that note of the concerns about like over-rationalizing romantic love, do you have any specific stories in your own lives, maybe recently, or just in learning these things that you can reflect on that maybe seemed magical at a time, but seem maybe a little bit more make a little bit more rational sense now?
I think that's the difficult part of it. I think the magic is still really difficult to explain. There's still maybe that one person that you see and you're like, wow, that was an amazing moment. I just witnessed this person and do this thing, and now I feel all the, I'm not, I don't know. We've talked about it, and we have these thoughts that we see it and we're like, oh, this is happening in my brain.
This is what's going on.
This is why I'm feeling this. But before all of that, you still have the, oh my God.
You still have the feeling, you know? Yeah. I feel like, because we have been doing it a lot. I think, I don't know if this is an advantage or a disadvantage. It's like, when this is kind of all you're doing in a given week, thinking about, you sort of see it a lot in your life and your world around you. But it's like, we sort of decode that. It's like, okay, I think about someone I saw on the bus and I'm like, why do I find them attractive? And then I'm like, they're so-and-so, cues of fertility, cues of health. and then it sort of kind of, it helps me like sort of break it down, and then I'm sort of like, oh, it's just my, I know we've told people, I think we've had some discussions with close friends in the class about like a crush on someone. Well, it's just your brain firing a bunch of dopamine, making you motivated, and that sort of, I don't know, kills the magic there, but we constantly go back and forth with that, like,
right?
Yeah.
Have either of you ever watched Community? The TV show.
You have. I haven't seen it.
Do you know that scene where everyone looks like they're like, oh, anyone could be with anyone, and they all start looking around the table? Have you ever had any moments like that in your class? Where you're talking about love and then you're like,
We did this fun thing in class the other day. There's a
one. It was Valentine's Day.
On Valentine's Day, Valentine's Day theme class. We had everyone do this love personality measure. Developed by Helen Fisher, who's a big researcher in the field of love, and it sort of gives you like one of four types, and then we had everyone share each other's types, and then you know that actually certain types are supposedly a good match for each other, and certain types like will go for the opposite type, and we had everyone like tell us what theirs were on the board, and we kind of on purpose didn't actually try to match or do any of that stuff. We kind of thought about maybe doing a speed dating.
We thought about it after. We were like, now we know what matches we should put the
but
people
yeah, now it's
together
like, well,
and see what happens.
We see how much like validity this kind of construct might have. It's cool to like be like, because you can also see it in friendships. I think one thing we forget is also like we are very focused on just purely romantic love, but a lot of the things overlap with like how you make friends or how you make other social relationships.
Right. But, just a side note though, me and Ryan we're a perfect match.
Our
love types.
Yeah.
Which is great actually.
We've done a bunch of the compatibility things for fun, and we come up with like matches on a lot of things, and it makes sense. That's why we're really good friends. But we can
Does it pose any problems as roommates?
No. Nah.
Well, we don't have too much time left, but I'm wondering if either of you want to take a shot at your best, definition of love as you've learned in this class. I know that might be a tough question.
That's a great question. Before I started the class, when it was still in conception, I was on a podcast talking about the course, and they asked me to define love, and I'm interested to see what my current definition might change.
A little comparison.
Would you want to go for
it? It's tough. We tried to do it in class, and
we realized
it's difficult to create maybe like a sentence that would describe what love is, well, romantic love specifically. So we had a couple of brainstorms, and there was some really good words that stood out. There was devotion. I really liked vulnerability,
empathy.
Man, we had some good talks, but there was no like single.
It's hard to put in a sentence. For me, love is,
because love changes and evolves, and there's different, as we're seeing, there's different stages, there's different types, there's many different types outside romantic love. There's love romantically is completely different for one culture to another. So,
and
I would only want to say like romantic love specifically, my definition would be the partnership between two people. Although it's not always two people. Oh, see? It's so messy.
One thing I like is what I say is the easy way out is this. Carrie Jenkins is a professor here in the philosophy department. She wrote a book about sort of love. And her definition was that love is something that we've evolved and has biological machinery in our brains. That's all the, like, your hormones and your neurotransmitters embodying currently like a modern social role where it's motivating us to seek out and maintain social bonds with other people. And so that's how I define love. Mm-hmm. That kind of keeps away from the nitty gritty or anything like that.
I'd like to just define it by a neurochemical cocktail that we perceive, our brains perceive to be magic.
So,
yeah,
so that's yeah. his mind. That's is love. Love is a magical thing that you can't grasp. It's hard to
love
define.
Love is a magical mess of your
brain.
Of your brain. Amazing. Yeah. Okay, well, thank you so much for agreeing to
thank
come.
You.
Thank you for having us.
And doing this. Sorry for the lateness. And all the mess. But I really appreciate this. It was really, really fascinating. Thank you.
Thank you, Theo.
Thank you.
All right. And that wraps it up for today's interview about the psychology of love. Thank you for listening, folks, and stay tuned after the break for an interview with one of TEDxCBC's upcoming speakers, Abira, about her upcoming presentation on the importance of acknowledging food as a storytelling device.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. Nisiyam, Nisiyaya, Thikum Queen Ansep, Hydra CM, Nisiyam, Nisiyaya, Anthas
Yakhlia, Talit Sim, Homasque Mustail. Last night when you pulled through, I put a spell on you.
Organize UBC wants to unionize student workers. Are you a research assistant, an academic assistant, or a work learn? For far too long, student workers have endured low wages, no job protection, and poor working conditions. Organize UBC is fighting back, and all they ask is for student workers to sign a card on their website so the union becomes certified. To sign a card and to find out more information, go to organizeubc.cupe.ca.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to CITR 101.9's weekly news radio show, Against the Current. And before the break, we were talking about the psychology of love and a student-directed seminar at UBC that discussed that. But now we're going to launch into a conversation with Abira, an upcoming TEDx UBC speaker, about how we can use food to tell stories. Okay, can you start by introducing yourself for me, please?
Hi, everyone. My name is Abira. I am a fourth-year student in LFS studying dietetics, and I am one of the nine TEDx UBC 2023 speakers. Excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Very cool. Very cool. So can you start off by telling us a little bit more about why you wanted to be a TEDx UBC speaker?
Sure. I don't really know exactly why I wanted to be a TEDx UBC speaker, other than just the fact that I think I've always been really passionate about food, nutrition, mental health, and this year specifically really looking into more what that means in the context of well-being, especially for BIPOC communities and immigrants. So a lot of, I guess, my passions have been focused in this realm of really understanding like the complicated role that food plays. I think through my education, I've also really, really been passionate about it. And as a joke with me and my friends, whenever we're kind of talking about these subjects or if I'm ever going on a little bit of a tangent, it became kind of like a joke, like, oh, you should give a TED talk about this, like it would be so fun. And I think when the application came out, I didn't really think that I would get it, but I was like, I think it's just a good opportunity for me to like kind of pitch something that I would be passionate about. I'm really, really glad that I got it. It's still very surreal. I'm very excited to really talk about something that I think I've been discussing a lot at work, with my friend groups, families, extracurriculars, in classes, and that sort of thing.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm glad that you got it. I also find these topics really interesting, and I'm curious to know what kind of sparked your initial interest in these areas.
Yeah, it was definitely a very personal experience. I think growing up as like a South Asian first-generation immigrant in kind of the school system here is a little bit complicated, especially when I guess growing up you start to feel a little bit of a disconnect, or at least I did, in terms of the foods that I would eat at home and the foods that kind of were popular at school. And so I didn't really realize how it really all started from a very young age of feeling like I couldn't necessarily eat the cultural foods that my mom had packed me for lunch, but I would really, really enjoy eating them at home. And so there's like a lot of fond memories that we have attached to, you know, my mother's cooking, or celebrating in terms of, you know, cultural holidays or like Eid or Ramadan, and what that means in terms of, you know, building community here and building community on campus, and really just a lot of storytelling through food, as well as really discussing with other students, whether they be international students or domestic students from different cultural backgrounds, like what stories and memories they have attached to food. And it's just been an honor talking to a lot of my friends and coworkers about this and understanding how a lot of their identity and pieces of relationships are tied to specific meals or specific moments in time. And really just highlighting that from, I guess, a dietetic student perspective of how that's just as equally important as the actual like macro and micronutrients going into your body.
Absolutely. I'm curious then to know, like, what exactly will you be talking more about during your TEDx talk?
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of emphasis, I would say, on the storytelling piece as well. So it's a lot of, I guess, my personal experience and story about what food means to me, aside from just, you know, the nutritional perspective and kind of what sparked my interest in this field to be able to even like want to study it, you know, for an undergraduate career. It's also going to be a lot of, I guess, storytelling or examples of moments where food has had a big impact on the lives of my friends and family. So like very personal experiences that I'm really grateful that my community like trusted me to be able to share that, as well as just a lot of research on what really drives people to kind of distance from cultural foods, especially immigration. So we are going to be hopefully I'll be addressing acculturation, as well as what I guess the push for more cultural foods in hospitals and schools looks like and what that means for communities. So yeah, it's going to be a little bit mix of like the research component, but it'll be, I want to say, more on the personal storytelling side for sure.
I see, that makes sense. And obviously, you know, during a TEDx talk, you can only talk about so much. So I'd also like to learn a bit more about what you've learned during this process and what you want to talk more about in the future that you might not be able to address during this conversation you'll be having, I think, on Saturday, actually.
Yeah, it's coming up pretty quick. Yeah, for sure. I think narrowing down to a specific topic was like one of the hardest things for me, just because when I think about like storytelling and culture and food and identity, there's just like so much that comes up. So like I think I'm lucky that this is kind of my first one, and it's kind of, I don't want to say a pilot, but like it's kind of more of an intro. I really wanted it to be kind of a more introduction to myself. So it's been a little bit difficult to be writing things that are very vulnerable and personal to, and share that to people who, you know, I haven't met and who will be in the room on Saturday, who I don't know. So that's been like the biggest process, is like getting a lot of my vulnerable stories that I didn't realize were like so personal to me kind of out on paper, to kind of practice it and be able to say like, yes, I'm going to share this. But also I think I really didn't know how much to talk about in terms of like what I've done versus like research and what this means in like a larger public health perspective, what it means in terms of, you know, there's like mental health research that shows correlations to the benefits of, you know, traditional foods and that sort of thing. And I think like just to follow up on your question about maybe what other topics or things this branches off of is like, I don't know, I would love to talk about diet culture and colonization specifically, and how this is very linked a little bit to it, because inherently colonization has impacted the way people eat, their access to food, especially with Indigenous people. But what does that mean in terms of like the way we see ourselves and like, you know, these standards and I guess all this stuff that's very much pushed in society today, and like kind of understanding where it comes from, especially in order to understand the barriers that BIPOC communities face within healthcare, and more so specifically in terms of like eating, to feel understood about what they're eating. So that's kind of larger picture interest, But yeah, I think I'm really excited for this one to be a little more personal and very based on like just personal experiences and stories, and how that matters just as much as academic research and findings. So.
Oh, absolutely. I completely agree with you on that. I'm a journalist myself. I've written personal essays and stuff, and it really is important to be sharing those kind of personal stories and honoring them just as much as academic research or hard news, as we call it in journalism. So I'm also very interested in what you were saying about diet culture and colonization, and I'm excited to listen or hear about what you have to say on the topic whenever you find the chance to. And kind of on that note, you know, there are so many different ways of storytelling, and obviously doing these kind of public presentations is one of them. But what other kinds of forms of storytelling are you interested in and interested in engaging with to tell your own stories?
One specifically tied to my talk is just cooking and how that's a form of storytelling. So like cooking and baking and sharing food with people is inadvertently a form of storytelling, and kind of sharing, you know, knowledge. And this is something that I'm hoping to also touch upon on Saturday. But also just like speaking just to people, just conversations that don't necessarily always have to be documented. But I think it holds like such a big, I think, role in my life. Is a lot of the times I haven't been, you know, the things that I hold very close to my heart in terms of like stories that my family has told me, and a lot of like things have just been like a lot of verbal knowledge that's just been like repeated. But I also just like love to talk to my friends about different topics and just open up these conversations that like often get us like really reflective and that sort of thing. But I also really do love art, and I think one thing I definitely want to take time out for is just like getting back into like freehand drawing, writing. I was like a big journaler at one point, and I realized that like I'm really missing that ability to like just like dump all my thoughts out and like create something of it, especially with like watercolor painting or that sort of thing. But yeah, I think like inherently a lot of the times we don't even know, but we're like kind of sharing stories through photography or art or cooking, and then obviously like just even writing specific things down. So yeah,
absolutely. I love art. I love writing. I love talking to people. So I completely resonate with everything you've been saying. And I also think I really appreciate the way that you're stressing how important it is to just talk to people, and that not all forms of learning and storytelling have to be done like on a stage or in a classroom and stuff. And it's just as valuable to have it in those kind of intimate, casual settings. I think that's about all of the questions and stuff I had planned to ask you for today. But is there anything that you'd like to chat about before you wrap up? Anything that you'd like to share with our audience?
No, thank you so much. I would just plug, get your tickets to TEDxUBC if you haven't already. It's happening March 4th at the Life Sciences Center.
And that is it for our show today, folks. You're listening to CITR 101.9. And it's weekly news radio show Against the Current. I hope all of you are staying safe out there. Go and bundle up and stay inside if you can. And maybe grab some hot chocolate. I'll see you next week.
I'm Christine Dibble.
And I'm Carla Slytome.
And we are the KNC Jazz Duo. And you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
Bye. robots need love too.
This is Dan Mangan, and you are listening to CITR 101.9 in Vancouver and surrounding university area.